Okay, so here we are back to the Q&A again. So let's see what we have for this evening. Okay, Pibante, if it is suitable for the retreat, what were the other questions you asked as a Ganha? Oh, I didn't actually ask him all that many questions because I asked him how he suggested to do metta practice, and then I think I asked him something about how I could be a best assistant to Ajahn Brahm, I think was the question I asked him. And he said, make sure he eats a healthy diet, that's what he said. That's very hard to do that, so I sort of said, oh, very difficult one. I didn't really ask any other questions about Dhamma practice, because it wasn't really, didn't seem right at the time.
ඒ ප්‍රශ්නෙන් අහලා තිබුණේ අර අජාන් ගන්හාගෙන්, ඒ කියන්නේ තායිලන්තයේ ඉන්න ස්වාමීන් වහන්සේගෙන් මොනවද අහපු ප්‍රශ්න කියලා. ස්වාමීන් වහන්සේ අජාන් බ්‍රහ්මාලි ස්වාමීන් වහන්සේ අජාන් ගන්හා හම්බ වෙන්න ගිහිල්ලා මොනවද අහපු ප්‍රශ්න කියලා තිබුණා. ඉතින් උන්වහන්සේ වැඩිය මේ භාවනා ගැන හැම ප්‍රශ්න හැවි නැහැලු. මේ උන්වහන්සේ තව අහලා තියෙන ප්‍රශ්නයක් කොහොමද අජාන් බ්‍රහ්මවංශෝට හොඳම සහායකයෙක් වෙන්නේ කියලා. එතකොට මේ ඒ අජාන් ගන්හා උත්තර දීලා තියෙනවා බ්‍රහ්මවංශෝ ස්වාමීන් වහන්සේට හොඳ සමබර ආහාර වේලක් සකස් කරලා දෙන්න කියලා. මොකද මේ බ්‍රහ්මවංශෝ ස්වාමීන් වහන්සේගේ නිතර එහෙම යන හින්දා හරියට කෑමක් බීමක් ආහාරයක් හරියට පිළිවෙලට වැටෙන්නේ නැති හින්දා උන්වහන්සේගේ උදරයේ අමාරුවක් තියෙනවා. ඉතින් ඒ නිසා තමයි අජාන් ගන්හා කියලා තියෙන්නේ අජාන් බ්‍රහ්මවංශෝට හොඳ ආහාර වේලක් සකස් කරලා දෙන්න කියලා. ලෙඩ නොවීම පිණිස.
Okay. Next one here, Devante. I've heard it said that the upeka of jhana is different from the upeka of the Brahma Viharas. That the upeka of jhanas arises as a jhana factor, while the upeka of the Brahma Viharas arises from contemplating kamma, I am the owner of my kamma, etc. Is this from the suttas or is it from the Visuddhimagga? With thanks and appreciation. It's not from the suttas, because this is not mentioned in the suttas exactly how you do the upeka Brahma Vihara. I don't think it says anywhere. It arises from contemplating kamma, I am the owner. I guess that's one possibility. I can't see why that shouldn't be, might not work, but of course you have to take this to a very, very high extent. In fact, so far that, of course, that particular contemplation probably disappears into the background a long time before you reach the upeka, the real upeka of the Brahma Viharas. Are they different or the same? To be honest with you, I don't really know. I guess maybe there is perhaps a slightly more powerful aspect to the upeka in the Brahma Viharas, because you are deliberately cultivating the upeka in that particular case, whereas in the jhana it more arises as a byproduct of moving to the four jhanas. But even there is an inclination to upeka, because you have to incline towards that, I think, to even reach the four jhanas. So I think they are probably very similar. Maybe there is some difference, but it's really outside of the scope of what I can really answer to with any degree of certainty here.
මේ ප්‍රශ්නෙන් ඇහුවේ ධානවල තියෙන උපේක්ෂාවයි බ්‍රහ්ම විහාර උපේක්ෂාවයි අතර තියෙන වෙනස ගැන අපි කලින් කතා කළා. ඒ සම්බන්ධයෙන්ම ඇහුවේ ඒ සම්බන්ධ සූත්‍රවල සඳහන් වෙලා තියෙනවාද කියලා. ඒ කියන්නේ ධාන උපේක්ෂාවයි බ්‍රහ්ම විහාර උපේක්ෂාවයි අතර තියෙන සම්බන්ධය හෝ වෙනස්කම පිළිබඳව. උන්වහන්සේ සඳහන් කළේ ඒ ගැන සූත්‍රවල ඍජු සඳහනක් නැහැ කියලයි. නමුත් උන්වහන්සේ ඊට පස්සේ ප්‍රකාශ කළා බ්‍රහ්ම විහාරවල තියෙන උපේක්ෂාව බලවත් විය හැකි ධ්‍යානවල තියෙන උපේක්ෂාවට වඩා කියලා. නමුත් ඒ දෙකම බොහෝ දුරටම සමානකම් තියෙන්න පුළුවන්. දැන් බ්‍රහ්ම විහාරවල උපේක්ෂාව විශේෂයෙන්ම උපේක්ෂාව වඩන නිසා ඒකේ බලවත්කමක් තියෙන්න පුළුවන් ධ්‍යාන උපේක්ෂාවට වඩා.
Okay. The next one here, Venerable Bhante. Thank you for coming back. Bhante, I need big time advice. I attended the last retreat and had a splendid time. Sadly, following my return to mundane life. My normal lunacy returned. I guess I was being a rabid dog on a leash. Venerable Bhante, please be kind to advise this lay lunatic how to stick to the path on a daily basis and to maintain long-term practice. Please help with heartfelt gratitude and metta. Okay, so I think one of the problems in daily life, once you are on the retreat, you have the input of the Dhamma all the time, you have the good friends around you to remind you what you're supposed to do, so it's actually very easy because everything pushes you in the right direction. When you go back to lay life, you lose that sense of input of Dhamma. Sometimes you're not around the right friends and all these kind of things. So make sure you have that support network, right? Make sure you hang out, you're with friends who actually think like you, who act like you, who support you in your practice. This, I think, is one of those essential reasons why the Kalyanamitta is so highly praised on the Buddhist path. So this is one thing. The second thing is to make sure that you have access to some nice Dhamma talks, right? That can be anything from reading the suttas, if that inspires you. If that doesn't inspire you, listen to some talk online or wherever it is to make sure you have that input in your life, a thing which lifts you up, raises your spirits, and then allows you to reminds you all the time what you're supposed to be doing. So you need this inspirational thing, right, to keep you on track. And when you do that, you're heading in the right direction here. So remind yourself, one of the powerful things here as well is the death contemplation. The death contemplation has this very powerful ability to put things in perspective. Right? You could be dead tomorrow. If you're going to be dead tomorrow, how are you going to act today? How does that change your attitude to life? How does that change your attitude to your daily schedule, the things you do, etc.? So death contemplation can be very useful in those circumstances because it tends to make very clear what our priorities should be in life.
මේ ප්‍රශ්නය ඇහුවේ ගිය වතාවේ භාවනා කරන්න ඇවිල්ලා හොඳට භාවනා කළා ආපසු ගියාට පස්සේ හැබැයි ආයිතර පිස්සු ගතිය ආවා මේ කලින් ඉඳන් තිබුණු. ඉතින් කොහොමද ඒ తත්වයේ හදාගන්නේ කියලා අහන්නේ. ඉතින් මේ ස්වාමීන් වහන්සේ ප්‍රකාශ කරනවා ඒ සඳහා හොඳ යාළුවෝ පිරිසක් මේ කියන්නේ ධර්මයට ලැබි පිරිසක් අතර ඉන්න ඕනේ කියලා. ඒ වගේ පිරිසක් හදාගන්න කියලා. ඔබ වගේ භාවනාවට උනන්දු වෙන භාවනා කිරීමට මේ නිවන් මාර්ගයේ යෑමට උදව් කරන අය පිරිසක් ලෑස්ති කරගන්න කියලා. ඒ වගේම හොඳ ධර්ම දේශනා අහන්න කියලා උන්වහන්සේ කියනවා. සූත්‍ර ධර්ම කියවන්න පුළුවන්. ඒ වගේම උනන්දු කරවන නිවන් මාර්ගය යන උනන්දු කරන දේවල් ලං කර ගන්න පුළුවන්. විශේෂයෙන්ම මරණානුස්සති භාවනාව වඩනවා නම් එය හරීම ප්‍රයෝජනයි. ඒ බොහොම බලවත් දෙයක්. හෙට මැරෙන්න උනත් පුළුවන් කියලා කල්පනා කරනවා නම් එතකොට හිත ඉරායාසයෙන්ම ධර්ම මාර්ගය වෙත යොමු වෙනවා.
Okay, Dibante, my question is about the sutta on the removal of resentment. Often people find themselves in relationships where there is unequal bargaining power between the two individuals. In such situations, one person can be controlling, manipulative, verbally and emotionally abusive. This behavior can erode the other person's capacity to think rationally, and putting up with abusive behavior can even bring out the sadist in the other. In such situations, isn't it better to follow the advice that the experienced meditating cobra gave the one who was a novice in Ajahn Brahm's stories? Okay, in my experience, this kind of response has helped transform, reprogram the abuser, which has made him a happier person. The advice that the experienced meditating cobra gave the one who was a novice in Ajahn Brahm's story. Okay. Is that the story of the hissing at the snake? Maybe that's the one you mean. I'm not entirely sure what you mean. But maybe you're talking about sometimes you need to hiss a little bit to kind of be assertive or something like that. Perhaps that's what you mean. Which makes him a happier person. Yeah, so indeed, if that's what you mean, I'm not entirely clear, but if that's what you're talking about, then yes, sometimes, of course, you have to be assertive. One of the important things on the Buddhist path is to look after ourselves and not to kind of allow other people to abuse us. Being a Buddhist does not mean that we should just allow people to abuse us, right? And that's crazy, crazy idea. We have to look after ourselves. We are closest to ourselves, and our own well-being should always be the highest priority, even before everybody else. So make sure you look after yourself. If that means being a bit assertive, so be it. If that means breaking up the relationship, so be it. We don't have to allow ourselves to be trapped in an abusive relationship as Buddhists. That is not the right way. Sometimes departing is perfectly okay, perfectly acceptable. So indeed, that's a good point. It does not mean we should never condone that kind of behavior and that kind of thing. Definitely not.
මේ ප්‍රශ්නය ඇහුවේ අර තරහව දුරු කර ගැනීම ගැන සඳහන් වෙච්ච සූත්‍රයටත් සම්බන්ධ කරලා ඒකේ නම ආඝාත පටිවිණය සූත්‍රය. කෙනෙක් තව කෙනෙක් මේ බලයෙන් යටපත් කරනවා නම් පාලනය කරන්න උත්සාහ කරනවා නම් දොස් කියනවා නම් ඒ පුද්ගලයාට කිසියම් ප්‍රතිචාරයක් දක්වන්න එහෙම නැත්නම් විරෝධය පාන්න එහෙම නැත්නම් ඒකට ඉඩ නොදී ඉඳීම කළ යුතු නේද කියලා වගේ තමයි මේ ප්‍රශ්නේ ඇහුවේ. ඉතින් ස්වාමීන් වහන්සේගේත් අදහස එහෙම තමයි මේ අපි ඉස්සෙල්ලාම අපි ගැන බලන්නට ඕන. අපට දොස් කීමට අපට හිංසා කිරීමට කිසිවෙක්ට ඉඩ දිය යුතු නැහැ. අපේ යහපත දියුණුව ගැන හැම විටම අපි මූලිකත්වය දෙන්නට ඕන. ඒ අනුව කවුරු හරි අපිට හිංසා කරන්න එනවා නම් එයින් අපිව ආරක්ෂා කර ගැනීම අපේ වගකීමක් යුතුකමක් කියලා අන්න ඒ වගේ අදහසක් තමයි ස්වාමීන් වහන්සේ කිව්වේ.
Okay. So, okay, next one here. Dear Bhante, most of my friends and relatives in the West have a vague and fuzzy notion that most people go to heaven, to Devaloka. They believe there isn't much to be concerned about, nor is it necessary to do much dana, etc. Right. That's terrible, isn't it? It's kind of... Okay, anyway, this idea also seems to be supported by research on NDEs, where many of the people, if not the majority, have good NDEs. The picture we get in the sutta seems quite different. For example, the last vagga in the Sanyutta Nikaya contains a repetition of suttas that states that those beings are few who, when they pass away, are reborn as human and devas, but those beings are more numerous who, when they pass away, are reborn in hell, animal realm, domain of ghosts, etc. In a simile, the difference between these two rebirths is like the difference between a little bit of soil on the fingernail and the great earth. Is this case of a difference between reality and the Dhamma? How reliable are the NDEs? What should I tell my family and friends that will decrease the fuzziness and improve the clarity? Okay, so yes, if you have... People believe that you go to heaven as a kind of a default in the West. I guess there are some people, no doubt. I think a lot of people in the West have no clue at all what's going to happen after they die. Most of my friends and family have absolutely no belief in anything whatsoever. So it's kind of, okay, we'll die and see what happens. True, there are still a number of Christian people in the West, and of course those Christian people, they will, will tend in that direction. That's probably true. It is true that NDE research is often focused on the good cases, focused on the good results that have happened, but there's also apparently a lot of results of people who had bad experience during NDEs. And remember, the vast majority of people who have who die on the operating table or wherever it is, they don't have any experience at all, right? NDEs is only a small percentage. So all those people who don't have an experience, well, where are they going to go? We just don't know. And it may be that precisely because they don't have an experience, perhaps that could mean that they are not going to a good rebirth afterwards. So I think it's very hard to know. We don't have enough data, there's not enough knowledge about these things to really know exactly what is happening here. So the picture from that Sanyutta Nikaya, yes, I am aware of those suttas. those particular suttas which compare the rebirth to the little bit of soil on the fingernail compared to the great earth, I don't personally find those suttas very reliable. I don't think they're very reliable. They are in a repetition series where every kind of rebirth is mentioned. Everyone is compared, like the dirt on the fingernail compared to the great earth. All possible permutations of different varieties going from here, going to there, back and forth. It looks like somebody has been having almost setting up a table of possibilities, what it looks like. It doesn't look like it. It is a real teaching of the Buddha. If you want to see the real teaching of the Buddha, it is found in suttas like the Balapandita Sutta, Majjhima Nikaya 129. And there, what you have there is the simile of the turtle, which is actually much more interesting and gives, I think, a much better picture probably of what is going on. And the simile of the turtle is the simile of the yolk, which is floating on the oceans. And every 100 years, a blind turtle comes up to the surface. And then it says that the chances of that turtle putting its neck through that yolk is equivalent to somebody who has been born, or some being who has been born in the animal world, or hell, I think, at least the animal world, been reborn in the animal world, the chance of coming back again to the human world, that is what that chance is like. So it is a very specific situation. Once you have gone to a bad destination like the animal realm, it is very difficult to get back again. That is the situation that is expressed there. Not the chances of being reborn from the human state to the animal realm. That's a very different situation. So that is bad enough, right? Once you get reborn in the animal realm, the chance of getting back is very slight. That's bad enough, and good enough reason to be very careful not to go to that kind of state. And I think also it means that you have to be actually, if you are a good person, the chances of being reborn as an animal, I think is very, very small. You have to actually do quite a lot of bad things to be reborn there. So that is really, as far as I'm concerned, the reality here, and not that whole sequence that you find in the Sanyutta Nikaya you're talking about, or is it in the Anguttara? I'm not sure. I don't think that is the real Buddhist teaching. I think that is some kind of thing that has come about later on. I don't think the Buddha ever said those things. If that is true, then it means it's almost impossible to get reborn in the high realm, right? And that is not the feeling you get when you read the suttas overall. The suttas overall encourage us to be moral, to live good life, so you can have a good rebirth. So this goes counter to the main thrust of the Dhamma, as far as I'm concerned. Okay, so is this a difference between reality and the Dhamma? I don't think so. I think that this can probably be made to match up somehow. How reliable are these NDEs? That's another question. It's very hard to know sometimes. But I think, generally speaking, there is obviously something going on there, right? There is something happening at the very least. What should I tell my family and friends that will decrease the fuzziness and improve the clarity? Well, maybe the best thing is to ask them to research the NDEs a little bit more carefully. Probably there is a bias towards publishing those NDEs that have good results, where people are getting something nice out of them, and there is a general tendency to suppress the other ones, because that's my understanding, because that is it's not something people want to hear about, so you don't talk about it. But of course, that gives a biased outcome. But if you look more carefully at the available evidence, I think the evidence is there for the negative NDEs as well. So try something like that. Probably a bit more research would be useful.
මේ ප්‍රශ්නේ ඇහුවේ ඒ ප්‍රශ්නේ අහන එක්කෙනාගේ බටහිර රටවල්වල ඉන්න ඥාතීන් බොහෝ දෙනෙක් හිතනවලු මරණින් පස්සේ දිව්‍ය ලෝකයට යන්න පුළුවන් වෙයි කියලා. ඒ සඳහා හොඳ දාන ආදී දේවල් කරන්න අවශ්‍ය නැහැ කියන අදහස ඒගොල්ලන්ගේ තියනවලු. ඉතින් ස්වාමීන් වහන්සේ කිව්ව ආකාරයට මට තේරුණේ ඒගොල්ලෝ ඇතන විට ක්‍රිස්තියානි අය වෙන්න ඇති කියලා. ඒගොල්ලෝ මරණින් පස්සේ ස්වර්ගයට යන්න පුළුවන් වෙයි කියන හැඟීමෙන් ඉන්නවා. ඉතින් ඒගොල්ලන්ට එහෙම හිතන්න එක හේතුවක් තමයි අර මරණාසන්න අත්දැකීම් කියන කාරණාව. මරණාසන්න අත්දැකීම් පිළිබඳව පරේෂණ කරනකොට බොහෝ දෙනෙක් හොඳ තැන්වලට යන බවක් පේන්න තියෙනවා. ඉතින් ස්වාමීන් වහන්සේ කියන්නේ එහෙමම නැහැ. මරණසන්න අත්දැකීම් අනුව බොහෝ දෙනෙක් නරක තැන්වලට යන බවත් පේන්න තියෙනවා කියලා. ඉතින් ඒ බටහිර ඥාතීන්ට කියන්නේ කියනවා තවදුරටත් මේ මරණාසන්න අත්දැකීම් පිළිබඳව පරීක්ෂණ කරලා එහෙනම් තේ ගැන සොයලා බලන්න කියලා. මේ මරණාසන්න අත්දැකීම් අතර බොහෝ තියෙනවා නරක අත්දැකීම් ලබන අය. ඒ වගේම උන්වහන්සේ මේ සඳහන් කළා අර නියපොත්තම අතර පස් ටිකක් අරගෙන බුදුරජාණන් වහන්සේ දේශනා කරනවා මිනිස්සු මිය ගිහිල්ලා ආයි මිනිස්සු වෙලා උපදින්නේ ඒ වගේ ඊටාම ටික දෙනයි කියලා. ඉතින් ඒ වගේ සූත්‍ර රාශියක් තියෙනවා සංයුත්ත නිකායේ. ඉතින් උන්වහන්සේ ඒ සූත්‍ර ගැන ඒ හැටි විශ්වාසයක් නැහැ. උන්වහන්සේ කියන්නේ ඇතැම් විට ඒව බුදුහාඳුරන්ගේ දේශනා නොවෙන්නත් පුළුවන් කියලා. ඊට වඩා මේ ඉඩකඩක් එහෙම නැත්නම් හොඳ කෙනෙක් නම් ඔබට තිරිසන් ලෝකයට යන්නේ නැතුව ඒ අපායට යන්නේ නැතුව එයින් බේරිලා ඉන්න බොහෝ ඉඩකඩ තියෙනවා කියන අදහස තමයි උන්වහන්සේ කිව්වේ. ඒ වගේම උන්වහන්සේ මතක් කළා අර අපි දන්න කන කැස්බෑව වියසිදුරෙන් අහස බලන කතාව. ඉතින් මේ මනුෂ්‍ය ආත්මයක් ලැබීමේ එහෙම දුෂ්කර එහෙම නැත්නම් දුර්ලභ ස්වභාවයක් තමයි කියන්නේ මනුෂ්‍ය ආත්මයක් ලබා ගැනීම පිළිබඳව. දුගතියක ඉපදුනහම ආයි සුගතියකට උපදින එක මනුෂ්‍ය ආත්මයක් වගේ සුගතියකට එන එක තමයි ඒ ඊටාත්ම අමාරු කාරණාව අර කන කැස්ද වියසිදුරෙන් අහස බලනවා වගේ කියලා කියන්නේ එකයි. දුගතියක ඉපදුනොත් එහෙම ආයිසරයක් මිනිසෙක් වෙලා උපදින එකයි ඊටාම අමාරු කාරණාව.
Okay, dear Bhante, according to the suttas, the definition of the being is Rupeko, Yochando, Yorago, Yonande, Yatanha, Tatra, Tatra Sato, Tatra Visato, Tasma Sato, Vuchati. Okay. Yeah. Under this definition, how can we look at the Buddha as a human being or being anymore? Please explain. Okay, so there is a definition somewhere in the suttas which uses the idea that what is the chanda, the desire, the nandi, the tanha, all of these are words for desire, basically, for tanha, etc. There is a being. Tatra visato, so where he is stuck or where he's holding on to, therefore he's called a being. He's called a being. Okay, so basically the definition of a being here is somebody who has tanha. That is basically the thing here. And of course the point is that the Buddha not having any tanha then, how can you call the Buddha a being? This is really the question here. Of course the Buddha obviously is different, not only the Buddha, but any kind of arahant will be beyond these kind of defilements, right? So any arahant. But the point I was making is not so much that, of course, the Buddha is different. Of course, the Buddha, the arahant, is different. Even the stream enter is different to some extent, right? They're not exactly the same as ordinary people. My point is that the bases they come from, they are people in the same way we are. The only difference is that they have taken that humanity of theirs to the highest potential. And we all have that potential in exactly the same way. The start point we have is the same. We're not starting from a different position. For example, if you say the Buddha is a bodhisattva who has been practicing for 4 incalculable eons, then we are starting from very different positions and becomes really incomparable to compare the Buddha with us. Or if you say the Buddha is actually a god, right? He's not really a human being at all. He is the Dhammakaya or whatever. Then you are starting off from very different positions and no comparison is possible. So the point is that this, whatever this definition of a being is, the point is we all have the potential to reach that state without tanha in exactly the same way as the Buddha had. That is really the point.
මේ ප්‍රශ්නය ඇහුවේ පාලියේ තියෙනවා රූපය පිළිබඳ යම් තණ්හාවක් නන්දියක් එහි බැස ගැනීමක් තියෙනවා නම් ආන්නේ කරුණෙන් තමයි සත්වයා කියලා කියන්නේ කියලා. ඒ වගේම වේදනා සංඥා සංකාර විඥාන පිළිබඳ තණ්හාවක් තියෙනවා නම් එහි බැස ගැනීමක් තියෙනවා නම් ආන්නේ කරුණේ සත්වයායයි කියනු ලැබේ කියලා. දැන් ප්‍රශ්නේ උනේ බුදුරජාණන් වහන්සේ තණ්හාව නැති කරලා නිසා බුදුරජාණන් වහන්සේට තවදුරටත් සත්වයේ කියලා කියන්න පුළුවන්ද කියලා. ඉතින් උන්වහන්සේ උත්තර දුන්නේ බුදුරජාණන් වහන්සේ උනත් මුලින් පටන් ගන්නකොට බුදුරජාණන් වහන්සේ රහතුන් වහන්සේලා සෝවාන් වගේ ආර්යයොත් කොහොමත් සාමාන්‍ය පුද්ගලයන්ට වඩා වෙනස් බවක් තියෙනවා. ඒගොල්ලෝ සත්වයෝ තමයි. නමුත් සත්වයෝ වුණාට සාමාන්‍ය සත්වයන්ට වඩා වෙනස් බවක් තියෙනවා උන්වහන්සේලාගේ. උන්වහන්සේලා ඒ සත්ව එහෙම නැත්නම් ඒ මනු ඒ ඒගොල්ලන්ගේ පුද්ගල භාවය උපරිම මට්ටමට දියුණු කරලයි තියෙන්නේ. ඔව් අපි හැමෝටම මේ මානුෂික ගුණධර්ම දියුණු කරන්න පුළුවන් උපරිම මට්ටමට ඊටාම පහළ මට්ටමින් පටන් අරගෙන ඊටාම උසස් මට්ටම දක්වා දියුණු කරන්න පුළුවන්කම තියෙනවා. ඉතින් බුදුරජාණන් වහන්සේ ඒ විදිහට උපරිම මට්ටමට මේ මානුෂික ගුණාංග දියුණු කරලා තියෙන්නේ. තණ්හාව නැති කළ බව හැබෑව. නමුත් උන්වහන්සේ මානුෂික ගුණධර්ම එහෙම නැත්නම් සත්වයක් වශයෙන් දියුණු කළ යුතු ගුණධර්ම උපරිම ප්‍රමාණයට දියුණු කරලයි තියෙන්නේ.
Okay. Panta, as you said, the four Nikayas are the words of the Lord Buddha. Then what about the fifth one, the Kudaka Nikaya, with the 15 books? My favorite suttas are there, like the Karaniyamata Sutta from the Sutta Nipata. Panta, correct me if I'm wrong. Commentary, is it not a word of the Lord Buddha? As I see, all the words of wisdom that arise is cause of the Dhamma. Thank you. Terawan Saranai. Okay, so there is one sutta which says all the words of the wisdom are the word of the Buddha. That's true. It's found in the Anguttara Nikaya. And I find that a bit strange, because it means that anything anyone says, which is kind of considered wise by somebody, would then be the word of the Buddha. So I think we have to be a bit more discerning than that, a bit more careful than that. Otherwise, it's going to be very hard to pin down actually what the Buddha said. The thing, what you have to do is you have to, you know, to find out what the words of the Buddha are, is you have to look at the literature which is available very carefully. And when you look at that literature, what you find is that there are certain discourses, certain parts of that whole Pali literature, which is very homogeneous, with the language used, the vocabulary used, the literary style, the ideas expressed, the philosophy is all very homogeneous and all fits together in a very nice pattern. And this literature is basically the four Nikayas. And once you move outside the four Nikayas, things start to change. If you look at the Jataka stories, for example, the Jataka stories are found in the fifth Nikaya, the Kudaka Nikaya. You see the ideas are different. The literary style is different. Some of the vocabulary is different. The whole feeling of what you're reading is very different, right? It no longer feels like the four Nikayas. It feels like something else. Of course, many of those stories, many of those Jatakas, they don't have parallels in other schools. Many of those, you don't find them in any other, in Sanskrit or in Chinese or anywhere else. They are specific to the Theravadan or to the Pali school. So you can see there are many grounds here for deciding on whether something is the early text, the word of the Buddha, or whether it's not. And also, they are mostly stories. They're not even said to be spoken by the Buddha, many of these things. And the same thing is true of large parts of the Kudaka Nikaya. It is true, as you say here, there are certain parts of the Kudaka Nikaya that are very similar to the main four Nikayas. Some of the verses in the Udana, in the Itavuttaka, some of the verses in the Dhammapada, some of the Sutta Nipata verses, some of that, maybe some of the Theragata and Therigata verses, some of that I think is probably very early on and very close to the time of the Buddha, perhaps even from the Buddha himself. But the vast majority of the Kudaka Nikaya is later developments, is philosophical works like the Patisambhidhamagga, for example, right? Commentaries like the Nidesas and all of this. So we need to be very careful here. One of the best ways of deciding what is early is to see what is in common between the different schools of Buddhism. What actually exists in Chinese translation? The Chinese Pitaka is enormous, very, very large, much larger than the Pali, because they have translated all kinds of things, Mahayana suttas, all kinds of things. But if you compare what exists in Chinese and you compare that with what exists in the Pali, you find basically Vinaya, right? Vinaya is roughly the same. Patimokkha rules, a lot of the Khandaka material, also the same. Then you have the four main Nikayas. The four main Nikayas exist in Chinese, not in exactly the same way, but very close. And then there are a few suttas also outside of that which exist in Chinese. For example, there is an Udana in the Chinese. There is Dhammapada in the Chinese. There is some of the suttas of the Sutta Nipata, like the Attakavaga, Parayanavaga, are found in Chinese. Some of the individual suttas, like the Ratana Sutta, is also found in Chinese, right? So these are all exist across the different schools. And because they exist from in different schools, we have to assume that they existed very early on, before these schools started to split apart and move into different parts of India. But most of the other things in the Pali canon, in the Kudaka Nikaya, only exist in the Pali, does not exist anywhere else. And when you come to the commentary, it's even worse, right? The commentary material is very, very specific to the Pali. Some of the stories in there may sometimes, occasionally, be found also in the other schools, but it's actually very rare. So there you can be very certain that this developed after the schools kind of split apart from each other, which would have meant after the time of Ashoka, probably, or something like that. So you can use your common sense and textual analysis, what they sometimes call textual criticism, is sometimes called. It's a fancy word for just looking at the text and, you know, seeing, using criteria like vocabulary and literary style to decide what is early and what is later. It seems fairly obvious that, you know, that this is the case because of the differences. And I can't really see that there is much doubt about this, that this actually is the case, that there's only a few suttas that were spoken by the Buddha, and the majority of the Pali tradition actually is later written by others. Anyway, that's my view of the matter. So, okay.
මේ උන්වහන්සේ සඳහන් කළා දීඝ මජ්ජිම සංයුත්ත අංගුත්තර මේ තමයි බුද්ධ වචනය අනිත් ඒවා ඒ තරම් විශ්වාස කටයුතු නැහැ කියලා. ඉතින් මේ ප්‍රශ්නේ අහලා තිබුණේ එහෙමනම් කුද්දක නිකායේ තියෙන පොත් ගැන ඔබ වහන්සේගේ අදහස මොකක්ද කියලා. මොකද කුද්දක නිකායේ කරණීය මෙත්ත සූත්‍රය වගේ ඉතාම ප්‍රිය කළ හැකි සූත්‍ර තියෙන නිසා. ඉතින් උන්වහන්සේගේ අදහස තමයි කුද්දක නිකායේ තියෙනවා බුදුරජාණන් වහන්සේගෙන් වචන යම් ප්‍රමාණයකට. නමුත් කුද්දක නිකායේ තියෙන පොත් අනිත් ගුරුකුලයක සංසන්දනය කරලා බලනකොට ඒගොල්ලෝ ගාව මේ පොත් දක්නට ලැබෙන්නේ නැහැ කියලා. දැන් චීනයේ ත්‍රිපිටකයක්, චීනයේ ත්‍රිපිටක පොත් යම් ප්‍රමාණයක් තියෙනවා. ඒව ඇතැම් විට ඒවට ඒගොල්ලෝ ලියපු සූත්‍රත් එක්ක එකතු කරගත්තාම අපේ ත්‍රිපිටකයටත් වඩා විශාලයි. නමුත් ඒ චීන ත්‍රිපිටක පොත් එක්ක එහෙම සංසන්දනය කරලා බලනකොට මේ කුද්දක නිකායට අයිති සමහර කොටස් ඒගොල්ලෝ ගාව නැහැ. ඉතින් මේ උන්වහන්සේ හිතනවා කුද්දක නිකායට අයිති පොත් වලින් ස්වල්පයක් මුල් කාලේ තිබිලා පස්සේ කාලෙදී ඒවා කවුරු හරි විසින් ලියන්නට ඇති කියන අදහස තමයි උන්වහන්සේට තියෙන්නේ. සමහර කොටස් චීන ඒවැයි තියෙන උදාන ධම්මපද සුත්ත නිපාත වගේ වෙන් කොටස් චීන භාෂාවෙන් තියෙන ඒ පොත්වලත් තියෙනවා. රතන සූත්‍රය එහෙමත් තියෙනවා. ඒ වගේ හැබැයි ජාතක වලින් ඉතාම ස්වල්පයක් තමයි තියෙන්නේ. ඉතින් ඒ පොත් පිළිබඳව සලකා බලනකොට ඒ වගේ කොහොමද කියන්නේ භාෂා ස්වරූපය වගේ දේවල් ගැන සලකා බලනකොට කුද්දක නිකායට අයිති පොත් පස්සේ කාලේ ඒවාය කියලා උන්වහන්සේ හිතනවාය කියලා, එහෙනම් තම උන්වහන්සේට එහෙමයි ඒක පැහැදිලි වෙන්නේ කියලා උන්වහන්සේ ප්‍රකාශ කළේ.
Okay, dear Bhante, my question is related to the wrong view in the 10 unwholesome courses of action, the Dasa Akusala Kammapada and the dog duty ascetic. That was the sutta I was referring to the other day, the Kukkura Vatika Sutta, Majjhima Nikaya 57, I think it is. I understand how one who has a wrong view will tend to do the remaining 9 unwholesomes and thus be reborn in a bad destination. But I don't understand how just having a wrong view itself is enough to lead one to a bad destination, even to hell. For example, the dog duty ascetic had a wrong view. What the Buddha said, if you have such a view as this, by this virtue or observance or asceticism or holy life, I shall become a god or some lesser god. That is wrong view in this case. Now, there are two destinations for one with wrong view. I say hell or the animal realm. It seems quite strong that just having this type of wrong view is enough to send someone who is living the holy life and believes in a rebirth to hell. What about other religions like the Christians, etc., that exist in the world today? Where is the line between the sort of wrong views that lead to the lower realms and the sort of wrong views that don't, or may even lead to heaven, possibly for the Christians? Thank you, Mante, for making the Dhamma clear in many ways. Okay. Yes, I think it's a good question. I often wonder about that myself. How is that view, apparently, it seems, can actually lead to a bad destination in its own right? And it must be that you are somehow taking on board the consequences of that wrong view, right? And of course, the particularly bad wrong views in the suttas are the view that there are no consequences of your karmic activities. You have all these intentions, bad intentions, good intentions, and you decide that there is no consequences of bad intentions, for example. So usually, of course, the really bad karma is if you have that view and then you undertake actions in accordance with that view. If you look at the standard definition for the Chut Upapata Jnana, the knowledge of the passing away and re-arising of beings, there it says specifically, this person has arisen in such a destination because of wrong view and because of undertaking actions in accordance with that view. So there you have both coming together. And that may be the more plausible explanation for what is going on here. You have bad wrong views, and also you have actions that conform with those wrong views. And if you haven't started those actions yet, at the very least, your wrong view is kind of leading you in that direction. You're heading for those bad actions, at the very least. So that is what I would understand that. The specific situation in the dog duty ascetic sutta, I don't actually know. I probably would have to have a look at it first of all before I can say anything. But I agree with you that it seems a bit, it seems quite harsh in a sense, and you wonder what is going on there. I think regarding the other religions like Christianity or whatever, I think that the wrong views probably aren't that strong, they aren't that bad. It's very similar perhaps to the Brahmanical views in ancient India who believed in the Mahabrahma or the Brahma or whatever, and they're going to were on a path to unity with Brahma. It sounds a bit like a Christian view that you go to heaven after you pass away. Very close enough anyway for comparative purposes. And I don't think the Buddha ever said that it was impossible for these Brahmins to be reborn in a good destination. There was only certain people with certain wrong views that the Buddha said they would never, I think the Ajivikas, I think there's one sutta somewhere where he says that he has never heard or seen of an Ajivika who went to heaven except for one case, and he apparently didn't really believe in the Ajivika doctrine or something like that. And those Ajivika doctrines, those doctrines of some of the other sects were much more, the wrong view was much more serious. It was the denial of rebirth. It was the denial of the consequences of karmic actions, right? If you go on the southern bank of the river Ganges with a razor-rimmed wheel, and you make all beings on the southern bank of the river Ganges into one mass of flesh, cutting them up, nothing bad has been done because of that. Right? That kind of idea is pretty bad. If you go on the northern side of the Ganges, and you are kind and compassionate, you are generous and friendly, no good act is done because of that. So very serious kind of wrong view. And this is probably, if you really believe those things and you act accordingly, no wonder you're going to end up in some very bad destination as a consequence. So sometimes you have to kind of, sometimes it's hard to know in detail every specific situation why the Buddha said he did what he did, like the Kukravatika Sutta. I think you have to look at the general overall picture of what is going on.
මේ ප්‍රශ්නය ඇහුවේ මිච්ඡා දිට්ඨිය දැන් මිච්ඡා දිට්ඨිය කියන එක විතරක් තිබුණාම අනිත් අකුසල් කරන්නේ නැත්නම් ඒ මිච්ඡා දිට්ඨියෙන් විතරක්ම දුගතියට යනවාද කියන කාරණාවයි ඇහුවේ. ස්වාමීන් වහන්සේ ප්‍රකාශ කළේ මිච්ඡා දිට්ඨිය තියෙනවා නම් ඒකේ ප්‍රතිඵල වශයෙන් ඒ අනුව ක්‍රියාත්මක විය යුතුයි. එහෙම නැත්නම් ඒ අනුව ක්‍රියාත්මක වෙනවා කියන එකයි. දැන් මේ චුතූපපාත ඥානයට අනුව එහෙම බුදුරජාණන් වහන්සේට පේන්නේ සත්‍ය මිච්ඡා දිට්ඨිකා මිච්ඡා දිට්ඨි කම්ම සමාදානා කියලා තියෙන්නේ. මිත්‍යා දෘෂ්ටියනුත් යුක්තයි. ඒගොල්ලෝ මේ මිත්‍යා දෘෂ්ටියට අනුකූලව කටයුතු කරනවා. එහෙම කටයුතු කළා මරණින් පස්සේ දුගතියට අපායට යනවා කියලා තමයි බුදුරජාණන් වහන්සේ දකින්නේ. එතකොට මිච්ඡා දිට්ඨිය තියනවා කියලා කියන්නේ මිච්ඡා දිට්ඨියට අනුව කටයුතු සිද්ධ වෙනවා කියන එකයි. නමුත් මේ අනිත් ආගම් ගැන බලනකොට ක්‍රිස්තියානි ආගම්, Hindu ආගම් වගේ වෙයේ ඊටාම අඩු මිත්‍යා දෘෂ්ටියක් තමයි තියෙන්නේ. බුදුරජාණන් වහන්සේ දේශනා කළා නෑ මේ අනිත් බ්‍රාහ්මණයෝ, ඒ බ්‍රාහ්මණ ආගම් එහෙම අදාන Hindu ආගම් අදාන අය මරණින් පස්සේ දුගතියට යනවා කියලා උන්වහන්සේ කියලා නෑ. එහෙම කියන්න බෑ. හැබැයි සමහර වෙලාවට මිත්‍යා දෘෂ්ටි තියෙනවා, ඊටාමත්ම බලගතු මිත්‍යා දෘෂ්ටි. මොනවද? දැන් ගංගා ගඟේ උතුරේ ඉඳන් දකුණට යන කම්ම මරවමින් මර එක මස් මිනිස්සු මරලා එක මස් ගොඩක් ගැහුවත් කිසිම පාපයක් නැහැ කියලා දෘෂ්ටියක් තියෙනවා. ඒ වගේම ගංගා ගඟේ දකුණේ ඉඳන් උතුරට යනකම් දන් දෙමින් දෙවමින් යාග කරමින් කරවමින් ගියත් කිසිම පිනක් නැහැ කියලා කියනවා. ආන්න ඒ වගේ මිත්‍යා දෘෂ්ටි තමයි බලවත් මිත්‍යා දෘෂ්ටි කියලා කියන්න පුළුවන්. අන්න ඒ වගේ ඒවා තමයි කෙලින්ම අපායට දුගතියට යන්න හේතු වෙන්නේ. එහෙම නැතුව දුර්වල මිත්‍යා දෘෂ්ටියක් තිබුණාට ඒ දුර්වල මිත්‍යා දෘෂ්ටිය දුගතියට යන්න ඍජුවම බලපානවායි කියලා කියන්න අමාරුයි.
Okay. Venerable sir, I am very happy to sit in meditation on a regular twice daily basis as I know this is the most profitable way to spend this time. Excellent. However, I do not look forward to these sessions with some eagerness and delight as I would be watching a cricket match, Sri Lanka versus Australia. Okay. How can I inject joy and happiness, anticipation into my meditation? Okay. So you are more keen on seeing the cricket than you are on your meditation practice. Okay. So I guess that is to be expected, you know. This is quite a common thing that people are more find these things more. It's much more exciting, right? It isn't very exciting to find this to sit down and meditate sometimes, unless your meditation is incredibly profound, and that's when you get really eager and really delighted in the meditation practice itself. So I don't know if that's possible. Perhaps you are just going to be satisfied with that, the fact that sometimes watching the cricket is more delightful than doing a meditation practice. It takes a lot of commitment and perseverance to get to the point where meditation has that kind of joyful effect. So it isn't easy to do that. What maybe you can do is just to understand the impermanence and the problematicness with all kind of sporting events, right? Sporting events, either they make you really happy because your team wins, or they make you really miserable if your team loses. And sometimes the team is going to win, sometimes it's going to lose, and you know that's the case. And even if it wins, it's only kind of nice for a day or two afterwards, and then you need another fix, right? The team goes out on the, you want to see your team win again, and of course it's never going to win all the time. It's impossible. So really asking for suffering by kind of following sports in that way. There's a lot of it's a very problematic idea to find happiness in sport, because only one side can ever win. In fact, if you look at things like soccer games, right, they have this table and there's 20 teams and only one team can end at the top of the table. All the other ones would kind of lose. And you are kind of supporting your team and kind of, yeah, go for it. But the chances that you're actually going to end on the top are very, very slim. There's a lot of suffering in rooting for sports teams, right? There's a lot of suffering in that. So start to understand that, start to see the downside, and then you become less fanatic about watching sports, etc. And then you can start to see actually the peace of meditation. Perhaps it is even better than watching the cricket game between Australia and Sri Lanka. That is a hard sell, I know, but maybe one day with a lot of wisdom and insight you can even be able to see that.
මේ ප්‍රශ්නය ඇහුවේ ඒ පින්වතා දවසට දින දෙවරක් භාවනා කරනවා මේ භාවනා කළාට මොකද මේ ඕස්ට්‍රේලියාවයි ලංකාවයි අතර ක්‍රිකට් මැච් එක බලන තරම් ආස්වාදයක් ඒකෙන් ලැබෙන්නේ නැහැ කියලා කියනවා. ඉතින් කොහොමද මේ ප්‍රශ්නෙට මුහුණ දෙන්නේ? ඉතින් උන්වහන්සේ සඳහන් කරනවා භාවනාව හොඳට ගැඹුරට වැඩිලා නැත්නම් ඒ විදිහේ මේ සතුටක් ලබන්න විදිහක් නැහැ. භාවනාවෙන් සතුටක් ලබන්න නම් භාවනාව ගැන හොඳ උනන්දුවක් තිබිය යුතුයි. ඉතින් මේ ඔය ක්‍රිකට් වල තියෙන මේ අසුභ පැත්ත බලන්න කියන එක තමයි උන්වහන්සේ කිව්වේ. නිතරම පරාද වෙනවා. කොහොමත් එක පැත්තක් විතරයි දිනන්නේ, අනික් පැත්ත පරාද වෙනවා. ඒ වගේම විශාල දුකක් ඔය ක්‍රීඩාව පසුබිමේ තියෙනවා. විශේෂයෙන්ම මේ ෆුට්බෝල් එහෙම බැලුවාම විශාල තරඟයකින් පස්සේ තමයි එක කණ්ඩායම් අවසාන කණ්ඩායම් දෙකක් තේරිලා එන්නේ. ඉතින් ඒ පසුබිමේ විශාල දුකක්, විශාල දෝමනස්සයක්, විශාල ආදීනවයක් ඒ ක්‍රීඩාව පසුබිමේ තියෙනවා. ඉතින් මේ ක්‍රිකට් පිළිබඳවත් ක්‍රිකට් පසුබිමේ ක්‍රියාත්මක වෙන ආදීනවය තේරුම් ගන්න කියලා උන්වහන්සේ සඳහන් කරන්නේ. එතකොට ඒ ගැන තියෙන ඕනවට වඩා ආසගතිය, ඕනවට වඩා මේ ඇබ්බැහි වෙලා තියෙන ගතිය දුරු කරගෙන භාවනාවට හිත යොමු කරන්න පුළුවන්කම ලැබෙනවා.
Okay. Dear Bhante, these days mindfulness meditation is quite popular in Western psychology and it is used for many psychological illnesses. These usages of mindfulness is very secular and narrow in therapeutic technique, like the MBCT, mindfulness-based cognition therapy, MBSR, mindfulness-based stress reduction. In your experience, what kind of psychotherapeutic aspects can be seen in the Satipatthana meditation? What kind of psychotherapeutic aspects can be seen in Satipatthana meditation? And not many at all, to be honest with you. And the reason is because Satipatthana meditation is actually quite profound. Remember that the Noble Eightfold Path has a very sequential aspect to it. You start off with some degree of right view. Because you have some degree of right view, you want to be a kind, compassionate person. So you start acting in accordance with the sila, the laws of morality. Then you have sammavayama, sammapadana, which is right action. And that is reducing the defilements in the mind. And only when the defilements in the mind are reduced to a very high degree should you really try to do Satipatthana meditation. It's like the breath meditation we're trying to do, right? You find with yourself, only sometimes does the breath meditation work. It only works when your mind is largely free of hindrances, largely free of problems. You have a clarity of mindfulness there, right? Only then does it work. The vast majority of the human population are not able to do anapanasati. It's just too profound. There's too many hindrances at stake. Too much of that kind of stuff. And people who have mental illnesses, we're probably talking about things like depression. If you have schizophrenia, for example, then meditation can be outrightly dangerous. It can make it worse. But for depression, it seems to have some benefits. But you're not really doing Satipatthana. What you're doing is some very basic getting to know yourself, getting to be aware of what's happening in your life, right? Sometimes they use the word Satipatthana, but actually it is very, very misleading. Satipatthana is a profound meditation technique to uncover the defilements of the mind and to move you towards awakening. It is not just sitting down and being aware of your thoughts or whatever. That is very misleading. And sometimes, unfortunately, they use these words very wrongly in these kind of Western psychology circles. So that was question number one. So number two, in present mindfulness is taken into combat zones, exactly, and business world to increase their powers and sensual desire, which has spoiled the origins of wholesome meaning of mindfulness. Isn't it our duty to show them the original samasati? Yes, it is definitely our duty. I fully agree. And it is rather unfortunate that they use mindfulness to kind of increase the efficiency of soldiers in combat zones. It's not a very good use of this at all. And we can't stop them from doing that. If that's what they want to do, what can we say? You've got to do what they are doing. But at least we can tell them that they're not practicing the Buddha's teachings. That at the very least we can make absolutely clear. If you want to practice the Buddha's teachings, then if you are going to be a soldier, well, if you're going to fire your gun, then aim above the head of the other person. You're not going to be very popular in the military, of course, but that's basically what you have to do. The world of business is a little bit different, perhaps. I guess there it depends on how you use that mindfulness. If you use it just for greed and to be nasty and whatever, then of course it is no good. But if an ordinary person uses mindfulness in their work life just to have more clarity, just to be more efficient or whatever, I don't think that is problematic at all. I think that's perfectly okay. So again, it depends really how it is used. But I wholeheartedly agree with you that if there ever is a question, we should make it very clear that sammasati, real sati, is based on morality as well. Morality is a very important part of all of this. So, sadhu for that.
Me davasala me batahira manovidyava tule me satipattana bhavanava bohoma prasiddhai. Eka me බොහෝ ලෙඩ රෝග සඳහාත් පාවිච්චි කරනවා ලෙඩ රෝග හොඳ කිරීම සඳහාත් ආව මේකෙදි අහන්නේ මේ සතිපට්ඨානයට තියෙන මනෝවිද්‍යාත්මක පදනම මනෝවිද්‍යාත්මක පසුබිම මොකද්ද කියලා ඉතින් ස්වාමීන් වහන්සේ කිව්වේ එහෙම මනෝවිද්‍යාවට ඍජුවම මේ සතිපට්ඨානය සම්බන්ධ කරන්න බෑ කියන කාරණාව බොහෝ දෙනෙකුට ආනාපාන සතිය ආදිය වඩන්නත් බෑ ඇතැම් වෙලාවට මේ සතිපට්ඨානය එහෙම නැත්නම් සතිපට්ඨාන භාවනා ක්‍රම සමහර මනෝ රෝග සඳහා අහිතකර වෙන්නත් පුළුවන් කියලා උන්වහන්සේ සඳහන් කළා. සතිපට්ඨානය කියන්නේ ඊටාම ගැඹුරු දෙයක්. ඒක නොයේක් දේවල් සඳහා පාවිච්චි කරන්න පුළුවන් කමක් නැහැ. සමහරක් වෙලාවට මේ වර්තමාන කාලයේ යුද හමුදාවේ අයගේ හැකියාවන් දියුණු කිරීම සඳහා සතිපට්ඨානය පාවිච්චි කරන්න හදන ගතියක් තියෙනවා. ඒ වගේම ව්‍යාපාරික කටයුතු හොඳින් කර ගැනීම සඳහා සතිපට්ඨානය පාවිච්චි කරන්න හදන ගතියක් තියෙනවා. නමුත් ස්වාමීන් වහන්සේගේ අදහස ඒ නියම සතිපට්ඨානය නෙමෙයි. එහෙම නැත්නම් ඒ නිවැරදි භාවිතයක් නෙවෙයි ඒක. දැන් හැබැයි ව්‍යාපාරික කටයුතු සඳහා සතිපට්ඨානය භාවිතා කිරීමේදී නම් ඒ ව්‍යාපාරික කටයුතු වඩා ගුණාත්මක වශයෙන් උසස් තත්වයට පත් කර ගැනීම සඳහා තණ්හාව දුරු කර ගැනීමෙන් වඩාත් ගුණවත් ආකාරයකින් ව්‍යාපාර කටයුතු සිද්ධ කර ගැනීම සඳහා නම් සතිපට්ඨානය භාවිතා කළ හැකි බවක් පේන්න තියෙනවා.
Okay, very good. So next question, Dear Venerable Sir, could you please explain how and why equanimity is called the highest position of the four divine abidings? Thank you, much obliged. Okay, so may you be blessed with good health. That's very kind of you. Thank you very much for that. So why is equanimity called the highest position of the four divine abodes? And I think the answer is a little bit similar to why the fourth jhana is the highest of the four jhanas. In the four jhanas, the previous jhanas, they have piti, they have sukha, and it's only the fourth jhana where all you have is equanimity, all you have is upeka. And the reason why upeka is above those things is because you have gone beyond happy and unhappy feelings altogether. You're left behind all happy feelings, you have pure equanimity, and you know that pure equanimity is actually better than those other feelings, right? you have come to a higher state, and you can look at those feelings and say those feelings are actually lesser than pure equanimity. It means you have the ability to abandon a very large part of the world. Almost the whole world is about feeling happiness and avoiding pain. Suddenly you have gone beyond all happy feelings. It's a very, very high state, and you can abandon almost everything at that particular point. And I think it's a similar kind of thing with the Brahma Viharas. You go through these stage by stage, and there comes a point when you actually go beyond metta, karuna, and mudita, have a lot of happy feelings associated with them. And then you go beyond those happy feelings to an even higher state, a state which is even more peaceful, even more simple. And that state is an equanimity, precisely because it abandons all those happy feelings, and you have a deeper appreciation for the whole world as you do that, in exactly the same way as you do with the four jhanas. It's very hard to understand these things, because how can equanimity be more happy than happiness? It's kind of weird, isn't it? But that is actually the felt experience when you get there. That is what the Buddha, the suttas seem to say, and the same thing should also apply to the Brahma Viharas.
May prasin yahi upeksha usasma Brahma Viharaya vasin salakanyai emetan kohomada kiyana karanawa. ඉන් සයින්ස් කියේ උපේක්ෂාව සතුට අසතුට කියන தত্ত্ব ඉක්මවා ගිහිල්ලා මුළු ලෝකෙම අය සතුට ගැන තමයි සොයන්නේ. නමුත් මේ පළවෙනි දෙවෙනි තුන්වෙනි ධ්‍යානවල තමයි සතුට තියෙන්නේ, ප්‍රීතිය තියෙන්නේ. ඒ தত্ত্ব ඉක්මවා යෑම ඒ සියල්ලටම වඩා උසස් தত্ত্বයක්, ඒ සියල්ලටම වඩා සතුටදායක එහෙම නැත්නම් උතුම් தত্ত্বයක් කියලා කියන්න පුළුවන්කම තියෙනවා. ඒ නිසා උපේක්ෂාව අනිත් සියලු මෙත්තා කරුණා මුදිතා ඒවට වඩා ඊටාත්ම උසස් තත්වයක තියෙන මානසික මට්ටමක්.
Okay, so Dibante, today's Dhamma talk, you said the Buddha doesn't exist because he died 2,500 years ago. But I think the belief the Buddha doesn't exist after his death, Parinibbana, is as mitcha as the belief that he exists after his Parinibbana, isn't it? I might be wrong. Please comment. Thank you. Yes, there is the standard kind of, 10 unexplained things, the avyakata dhammas in the suttas. And one of those is when people say the Buddha doesn't exist after the Tathagata doesn't exist after he dies. Does he exist or doesn't exist? Does he both or neither of those two? That's kind of the usual things. And this is also explained in the Yamaka Sutta, in the Kanda Sanyutta. You find the discussion about this. The point that all these suttas make, and the point of all of this, is that the Buddha cannot really be found as an existing entity in this life. And if he cannot be found as an existing entity in this life, how can you say that he either continues on or does not continue on after death? Because there's nobody here now, how can you say that he exists and doesn't exist after he dies? That is the point of those suttas. But of course, the five khandhas, which we call the Buddha, they do exist, right? The five khandhas being impermanent, changing all the time, they do actually exist. And you can communicate with those five khandhas. You can say, oh, please, Master, I have a problem in my meditation. Can you please help me? And then the Buddha can talk to you and give you a response. But after the Buddha has passed away, after those khandhas have ceased, you can't ask those khandhas anymore. They're no longer available. Khandhas, please help me. You can't say that, right? If you don't believe in the Buddha, you can at least say five khandhas. Five khandhas. And that is really the difference there. So one of these things is the mistaken view that a being persists through time. And that is what these questions are about. But the other thing is the fact that khandhas that are impermanent and changing, they do actually exist as a reality. And as much is actually said specifically in one of the suttas in the Kanda Sanyutta.
Ada dharma deshanayadi obohansa sandhan kala budurajanan wahanse tavadurutat pavatinne ne budurajanan wahanse avurudda 2500 kalinoi hitiye kiyala namuth den unwahanse kiyanne බුදුරජාණන් වහන්සේ හිටියේ නැහැ කියලා ගන්නවා නම් ඒ එහෙම තමයි බුදුරජාණන් වහන්සේ නැහැ කියලා ගන්නවා නම් ඒක අභ්‍යාකට ඒ කියන්නේ බුදුරජාණන් වහන්සේ උත්තර නොදෙන කාරණාවක්. එයාගේ බුදුරජාණන් වහන්සේ ඉන්නවා කියලා ගන්නවා නම් ඒකත් බුදුරජාණන් වහන්සේ උත්තර නොදෙන කාරණාවක්. බුදුරජාණන් වහන්සේ ඉන්නවාත්වේ නොවේත්වේ කියලා ගන්නවා නම් ඒකත් බුදුරජාණන් වහන්සේ උත්තර නොදෙන කාරණාවක්. ඒ වගේම බුදුරජාණන් වහන්සේ ඉන්නවාත් නොවේ නොඉන්නවාත් නොවේ කියලා ගන්නවා නම් ඒකත් බුදුරජාණන් වහන්සේ උත්තර නොදෙන කාරණාවක්. මේ කාරණා හතර අභ්‍යාකට ප්‍රශ්න යටතේ එන්නේ. හැබැයි මීට 2500කට කලින් බුදුරජාණන් වහන්සේගේ ස්කන්ධයන් තිබුණා. ඒ කියන්නේ රූප වේදනා සංඥා සංකාර විඥාන තිබුණා. ඉතින් ඒ කාලේ බුදුරජාණන් වහන්සේ ඉන්නවා කියලා කියන්න පුළුවන්කම තිබුණා. ඔව් පරිනිර්වාණයෙන් පස්සේ බුදුරජාණන් වහන්සේ ඉන්නවද බුදුරජාණන් වහන්සේ නැද්ද ඉන්නවත්වේ නොඉන්නවත්වේ නොඉන්නවත් නොවේ ඉන්නවත් නොවේ ආදී වශයෙන් කතා කිරීමයි මෙහි තියෙන වරද.
Okay. Devante, when breath is subtle, my mind is wandering for a long time. How can I reduce this problem? Okay, so when the breath is subtle, I think that's what it says, subtle, my mind is wandering. Okay, so I think this maybe what you should do then, you should, the problem is always about the breath being attractive or not, right? About you actually enjoying what you're doing. If the mind is wandering, it means you're not really enjoying what you're doing here. So somehow you have to find that enjoyment in your meditation practice. Either you can then look at the breath in a way that makes it beautiful. You can have a bit of metta towards your breath. Your breath is your friend. And make that, whatever you're doing, make it nice. This is the whole purpose when I talk about attitude in your meditation, right? The attitude is like, it's wonderful to be here, wonderful to be hanging out with my breath, moving on this marvelous journey of Buddhist meditation. And when you get this feeling of importance to it, of meaning, of joy in what you're doing, and then it becomes very powerful. You can do things like the Sila Nusati and the Chaga Nusati, what we were talking about before, whereby when you start out your meditation, or maybe do a bit of meditation first of all to settle down, then you can do the Chaga Nusati. Right, just think back. What have I done in my life that made a really big impact on me? What kind of good activity, what kind of charity work have I done that was very powerful and I felt so happy as a consequence? And then you allow your mind to go back to such a time. Don't force it. If you do Chaga Nusati by forcing your mind, it's not going to be very effective. But allow the mind just to come up with that feeling. And if you have some very strong experiences of generosity in the past, or strong experiences when you practice Sila in a good way, and you can remember that, you can bring those feelings into the present moment just by remembering what it was like. And then you can feel that same joy, that same elation right now that you felt then. And then when you bring that joy into the present moment, right, and you think, wow, now I'm doing something which is just as good, you get even more joy. Then you go back to the breath. Oh, how wonderful to hang out with my breath. And then things start to work out. It's all about enjoyment. Ability to hold on to something is only possible when you actually enjoy what you're doing. That's where it all comes from. If you find that breath meditation is not working for you, sometimes you can do other meditations. Do some metta practice, right? To help you purify yourself, to help you kind of get rid of some of the defilements in your mind. And then down the line, you can come back to Anapanasati later on. So don't just, if something doesn't work, don't just keep on doing it and doing it and doing it, because then after a while you get so fed up with this breath, you're never going to do it for the rest of your life. And I know that there are some monks who disrobe. They've been monks for a long time, right? For 8 or 10 years or whatever. And they said when they disrobe, I hate my breath. My breath is my enemy. How can you do breath meditation if you hate your breath? It's impossible, right? You have to be friends with your breath, first of all. So be wise about this. Know what you're doing. Don't just do things like some kind of, ox, right? The ox mind is the stupid mind. So just keep on banging your head against the wall. It isn't working. Investigate, right? Be clear about things. Use your intelligence. And then you will make progress when you do it that way. Okay, question number 2. If some monks like to continue this meditation in the coming rains retreat, I can facilitate 2 of them. Please inform me, Venerable Gina Ratanaha. Okay, so he is saying that if somebody wants to continue the meditation practice during the rains, then he can facilitate that, Venerable Jinaratana. Okay, so if you're interested in keeping on with practicing together, I suppose, then Venerable Jinaratana is the person to go to. I'm not even sure who that is, but anyway, you'll find out. Okay, very good.
Then me prasing ahuye. හුස්ම සියුම් වූ විට හිත විසිරෙනවා වැඩි කියලා. ඉතින් ස්වාමීන් වහන්සේ උත්තර දෙනවා ඔබේ හුස්ම ගැන සතුටක් ලබන්නේ නැති නිසායි එහෙම හිත දුවන්නේ හිත පිටතට යන්නේ කියලා. හුස්ම සමග සිටීම ඉතා මිහිරි දෙයක්. සුවදායක දෙයක් බවට පත් කරගත යුතුයි. ඉතින් එකපාරට මෙහෙම කරන්න බැරි නම් චාගානුස්සතිය ආදී භාවනාවක් එහෙම නැත්නම් ඔබගේ ත්‍යාගශීලී බව සිහි කරලා ඔබ කරපු හොඳ දේවල් සිහි කරලා හිතේ සොම්නස ඇති කරගත යුතුයි. හැබැයි ඒක ස්වභාවිකව සිද්ධ වෙන්නට ඕන. ස්වභාවිකවම බලකිරීමක් නැතුව තමන්ගේ ත්‍යාගශීලී බව තමන් කරපු හොඳ ක්‍රියාවන් දන් දීපු ආකාරය ආදිය සිහි කරලා ස්වභාවිකවම හිතේ සතුටක් උපදව ගන්නට ඕනේ. ඒ වගේම සීලය සිහි කරන්නට පුළුවන්. සීලය සිහි කළා තමන්ගේ හොඳ ගුණවත් බව ගැන සිහි කළා හිතේ සතුට ඇති කර ගන්නට පුළුවන්. ඒ සතුට ලබාගෙන සතුටුදායක හොඳ මානසික තත්ත්වයක් ඇති කරගෙන ඊට පස්සේ හුස්මට යන්න පුළුවන්කම ලැබෙනවා. ඔබ කරන දෙහි සතුට වෙනවා නම් තමයි එහි සිත එල්ලීලා තියෙන්නේ. හුස්ම ගැන සතුටක් නැත්තම් හිත එහි එල්ලීලා තියෙන්නේ නැහැ. තැන් වෙලාවට ඔබට පුළුවන් මෛත්‍රී භාවනාව කරන්න. මෛත්‍රී කළා හිතේ තත්ත්වය උසස් බවට පත් කරගෙන ඊට පස්සේ හුස්මට යොමු වෙන්න පුළුවන්කම තියෙනවා. සමහර හුස්මත් එක්කම හැපි ඉඳලා මේ හුස්ම එපා වෙනවා. හුස්ම එපා වෙලා සමහරක් වෙලාවට හුස්මත් එක්ක තරහ වෙනවා. භාවනාවත් එක්ක තරහ වෙනවා. එහෙම භාවනා කළා එහෙම භාවනාව එපා වෙලා සමහරලාට හාමුදුරුවරු සිවුරු ඇරලත් යනවා. ඉතින් ඒ වගේ විදිහට ඕනවට වඩා තදින් හුස්ම අල්ලගන්න යන්න එපා. ඉතාම ඥානවන්තව මෘදු මොලොක් ආකාරයෙන් සිතේ තත්ත්වය උසස් බවට පත් කරගෙන ඊට පස්සේ හුස්ම දිහා බලනවා නම් සතුටු සිතින් හුස්ම දිහා බලනවා නම් හුස්ම පිළිබඳව මිත්‍රශීලී ආකල්පයක් තියෙනවා නම් හුස්මත් එක්ක හිත රඳා සිටීවි නතර වේවි. ඊට පස්සේ කිව්වේ මේ භාවනාව කරගෙන යන්න කැමති නම් ඒ සඳහා ජිනරතන හාමුදුරුව උදව් කරන්න ලෑස්ති කියලා කිව්වා. ඊගා වෙන වස් කාලෙදී දෙදෙනා මේ භික්ෂුන් වහන්සේලා දෙනමකට පහසුකම් සපයන්න උන්වහන්සේට පුළුවන්කම තියනවා කියලා දැනුම් දුන්නා.
Okay everyone, so that's all for tonight. So we'll see you again tomorrow morning as usual at 8 o'clock.